Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We reach for apps for every possible ailment we have. It's so simple. We come from the natural world. Just going for a walk in a forest or just around the block improves your mood immensely if you're feeling a little bit low.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated with Tanya Gooden, the podcast that helps you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Because we've all been pushed around.
This is a podcast about learning to live healthily and happily with technology and the digital world, and about understanding why sometimes that's so hard to do. Because in learning how to step away from our phones more, we're actually learning how to focus more on our relationships, our work and our health, leaving us happier, healthier and with hours more time in our day. I'm your host, Tanya Gooden, author and founder of digital wellbeing movement Time to Log Off. Each week, I'll be asking a new guest what they've learnt about themselves from the relationship they have with the tiny tyrant in their pocket, their smartphone. So I'm chatting today to award-winning travel, lifestyle and commercial photographer Finn Beals. Finn shoots for huge global brands, the likes of Audi, Apple, Land Rover, Omega, Cartier. He's an early adopter of Instagram. He is Finn, F-I-N-N, on Instagram, where he has over 500,000 followers. And we had a lovely chat about his relationship with technology from those very early days. We talked about the kind of transition of his relationship between the digital world and the offline world, his amazing 72 Hours In series, which he showcases on his website, absolutely stunning photography, the book he's just written, The Photography Storytelling Workshop, and his connection with the natural world. You know, he lives in Hay-on-Wye in Wales, and he credits having that really strong connection with the natural world as being one of the reasons why he doesn't struggle with over-connection with digital technology, although he uses it to great advantage, obviously. So we had a really lovely chat about what he's been doing in lockdown, writing his book, some of the campaigns he's worked on, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. So Finn, hi, welcome to It's Complicated.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So obviously the podcast is all about our relationship with tech and the digital world. And you describe yourself as, one of the ways you describe yourself as an early adopter of Instagram. I think I could have worked that out when I saw that your Instagram handle was just Finn, which I was hugely impressed by. How did you manage to get a first name Instagram handle? You must have been very quick off the mark.
Yeah, I was definitely early in, but there's actually a little story to that, because Kevin Systrom, the guy who set up Instagram, he helped me adopt that name, actually. early on, when there are only sort of 5 or 6 employees in the Instagram office, you could email those guys.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, it was kind of like a direct line, and they'd reply to you. And I just said, I'm this photographer. And no, I posted a picture actually on Instagram. Oh, no, he posted a picture on Instagram. It was a picture of the office. And he said, we're working late into the night to bring you new filters for Instagram. And I commented on his picture and said, oh, I can make Instagram filters. And he emailed me straight back and said, oh, that'd be really interesting. So we struck up this little dialogue, and I sent him some looks and feels. And I was getting quite excited because I figured it might turn into an actual filter on Instagram. But he sort of went silent for a few weeks.
Aww.
And then I heard that he'd sold out to Facebook. Well, not sold out. It had been bought up by Facebook. And so sort of everything went in-house then. So the Ferrari in my mind just evaporated.
So you never
I never got a filter within Instagram, no. but through this sort of nice relationship we struck up, he got me the name, the handle Finn. So I owe it to him. So that thanks to Kevin for that.
So I don't know if you can remember when your first post was, but I actually looked it up.
Do tell.
Yesterday.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, you're coming up for your 10-year anniversary because it was the 16th of November 2010.
Wow.
So actually, I thought it might be quite nice because I've got our episodes are going out on a Monday. I think I'm going to actually put your episode out on the 16th of November 2020, which will be your 10th anniversary on Instagram.
Well, that seems fitting.
So Instagram launched on the 6th of October. So you were really quick in there on the 16th of November. And I'm so competitive. I looked up my first post.
Yeah.
And I was the 30th of November. So you beat me, Finn, by 2 weeks.
But I bet there's a gap in between that picture and the next one. Because I do remember.
I didn't look at that. Yeah.
So I do remember posting, downloading it, posting a picture and just thinking it was another one of those, you know, filter apps. I didn't really understand the social aspect of it, and it was only when a friend at a place that I was working said they were swapping from BlackBerry to iPhone to download this app called Instagram, and that was about a year later. I was like, oh, I remember that app, and I logged back in and I saw that picture. I think it's a picture of a tree.
Yeah,
is that the picture?
It is. Yes.
It had a bunch of likes and comments on it, and I was like, "Oh wow, that's really interesting." And I like dug into it a little bit more and sort of found out about hashtags and, you know, ways of sort of floating your content to the top of the pile, as it were. And I posted another picture and put some hashtags on it, and then all these sort of likes started popping up, and these sort of, you know, real world interactions happened. And that's when I thought, "Oh, this is really interesting. It's got some sort of."
This might take off.
Yeah, and it takes it beyond just a sort of filter app. And there were lots of them floating around then, back then.
Mm. So you describe yourself, and everyone else describes you as a storyteller. So I thought it might be really interesting for you to tell us a bit about your story of your relationship with the digital world and photography and how the two have become intertwined, because you didn't actually start as a photographer, did you? You started as a web developer, is that
web
right?
Web developer, designer, yeah. One of my sort of core clients back then was the Hay Festival, which is a big literary festival. I live in Hay on Wye, and I grew up here. And I developed their website for them way back when. So I spent a lot of time around authors and storytellers, and that's actually where I started shooting. I was working with photographers who were photographing the festival for the company, and I thought, oh, I could take better pictures than what I'm receiving. And so I literally bought a digital camera, and Peter Florence, the director of the festival, let me sort of run with it. I started shooting for the festival and then using those photographs in my design work, because I helped out some of the print campaigns. And I just really loved working with people face to face rather than being sat behind a computer all the time. I'd spent sort of 10 years developing sites and working on sort of brochures and things. And it's very kind of like solitary existence in a way, or just slightly disconnected because you're sort of interacting with the computer rather than the person. Real life interactions with people that really sort of got under my skin. So I sort of actually slowly transitioned or started picking up more commissions for photography than I did design. Built myself a website solely around photography. Ran two websites at the same time concurrently for a while, one for design work and websites and one solely for photography. Promoted the photography one through apps like Instagram and Twitter because that's where I wanted to head, and I slowly let go of the design work. So that's kind of my story to becoming a photographer. I wasn't trained as a photographer. I didn't go to school to learn photography. I didn't do a degree in it. And I am 100% self-taught, or self, you know, through experience, I guess. Cut my teeth at the festival.
And what was it about Instagram? I mean, you've told us a little bit about, you know, kind of when you worked out that engagement was what was going to make it different. But what was it about it that, you know, I mean, you've built up a huge following on there, made you put some focus or attention into it? Were you taking photographs specifically for Instagram, or were you taking your kind of offline photography work and posting them on the app? Or was there a kind of, was there a split between what you were doing in the different mediums?
A bit of both, really, and still to this day I share sort of professional work and personal work on there. But back then, in those sort of early days, it was a really sort of, it felt like a really nice collaborative arts platform. You know, it's comprised mainly of photographers and artists. There were no egos. There certainly wasn't any money in Instagram. That's definitely changed the game with things like sponsored posts and things. And I live in Hay. It's pretty remote. I am a creative person and I thrive off sort of creative relationships, and I developed some really wonderful friends on that platform, and I call them real world friends now, because I've gone to visit them and I've shot with them, and you know, I have friends in sort of Montana and LA and Japan and France and Germany and all these places, and I would never have met them if it wasn't for that app. So I forgot what your question was now, but that I think it's what I liked about Instagram, wasn't it?
Whether you were shooting different things for Instagram, whether you sort of, I mean, obviously the iPhone camera was so awful. We weren't getting great quality photography. So were you shooting stuff, you know, offline and then uploading it? Were you doing things specifically with Instagram?
It was a definite thing back then. iPhone only was the hashtag. It was a thing to shoot with your iPhone. And you say the quality was terrible, but when I look back on some of those early photos, I quite kind of like them.
Well, I think we thought the quality was good. I remember thinking it was amazing. But then now, yeah. I mean, you look at the lenses available.
Yeah, but they look a bit grainy and they look a bit crappy. But I don't know. I think with the sort of development of digital cameras, they've become so sort of clinical, so sharp.
Yeah.
It can sometimes rob the feeling from an image. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, the whole sort of filter, the whole concept of a photo filter is almost like degrade a digital picture, knock it back a little bit. Mm. Those early filters certainly did that, add a big, you know, heavy vignette around it, add some grain to it. And I still do that sort of stuff when I'm working on images that I shoot today. But in terms of what I was sharing on that platform, it was mostly stuff shot from around here, and that was probably because that got the most response from people. So it was a sort of validation aspect of the content that I was sharing. I'm sort of used to these views, but a lot of people from other parts of the world weren't. So beautiful misty mornings on a September day, I'd photograph them because it looked nice and I'd share it, and then all these lights would pop up and people would sort of say, "Oh, I never knew whales look like that." And I'm like, well, if you get up at 6 a.m. and climb the top of the mountain, that's, yes, it does.
And when did you start your 72 hours in series? Because I must say I got lost in a complete rabbit hole on your website looking at all your different 72 hour stories, which are so beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful just seems a really inadequate adjective, actually. But
that's really kind.
did you start with that? Was that an Instagram thing? Was that a website thing? Or
that relates to the festival. Because I was shooting for them, they moved overseas pre-Instagram. So this was more than 10 years ago. I didn't know that.
So they run hay festivals overseas, do they? I've never known that.
Yeah, Colombia, Mexico, India, the Maldives, Bangladesh. I travelled to all of these places. And because the festival ran over a weekend, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I was essentially shooting for 72 hours. A little bit longer than that. But that was the sort of the core festival. And I'd shoot little stories either side of the work that the festival were commissioning for me, and those formed the very beginnings of that series. So I think Colombia is on there, Mexico, India. They were all shot as like a sort of side project, a personal project, whilst I was working for the Hay Festival.
I have to say, I absolutely loved Rwanda. Was that not a festival? I mean, seeing the gorillas was just mesmerising.
Yeah, it was a really, really wonderful trip. That was a commission for Audi magazine, of all publications. They're a really nice editorial client that I've shot a lot of work for, and they just do really nice travel stories and approach me for some of the sort of more crazy ones. And that really was ridiculous. We were sort of hiking up through a bamboo-covered volcano, myself and a journalist, searching for a family of a gorilla. And we found them. A family of 27.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really amazing. There were two silverbacks in the group, actually, which was really interesting. There was the sort of dominant male, and he was coming to the end of his life, and our guides were saying that it's very rare for a group to have two silverbacks in the group, and they reckoned that he was sort of grooming the younger one to take over the family.
Oh.
Family dynamic. It was really special, really cool.
So did you very consciously use Instagram to get work in the early days? And is that still what happens? Do people find, I mean, your reputation now is, you know, much, obviously much bigger than that, but do people still find you via there? Do you get work via Instagram?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of art buyers or editors, magazines follow me. As I said earlier, I share personal work as much as I do commercial work on there. So if there's something that they see in the personal work or that connects with a brief that comes in across their desks, then they'll usually sort of tap me up, send me a message, say, we've got a really nice brief, it suits your style. That tends to be how the commercial world of photography works. A brief will come in and an agency that will look for a photographer that sort of connects with that brief. So, yeah, it's massively valuable. I do much less sponsored post work on Instagram than I did. I have done that before, but I would say I'm more commissioned outside of Instagram, but people find me through the platform.
It's interesting because I have spoken to a few photographers over the years who've said that they think Instagram and the kind of ease of now being able to take, you know, much better quality photos with the kit we've all got has devalued photography online, and that it's harder and harder for photographers to make money. How have you managed to make it work when so many others haven't? And what do you do about issues like copyright? Because again, that's, you know, a big issue when I talk to photographers who say, but it's so easy for people to screenshot, reproduce our pictures.
But it's tiny. It's a tiny resolution file. So what are they going to do with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to work for print, is it? But, you know, if they want to put it online somewhere, they can do it and use it.
They could, but they could do that off your website.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really down with, like, watermarking my images in that respect. I don't... The money is in commercial work, really. So it's shooting commercial briefs for sort of advertising. I don't really have a problem with putting my work up on Instagram and, right, if someone sort of pinches a tiny little, what are they, 900 by 900 pixel image. Yeah, it would annoy me. And I've had it in the past, actually. I have had someone take a picture from my website. I won't name them here, name the company here, but I've chased it up and I have gotten paid for it. as a result. I use that brilliant thing. There's a brilliant website called Way Back When.
Oh, yes, I know that. It's great,
the,
isn't it?
The internet machine. So you can sort of like go back and see how long they've been using the image. Yeah. And then I sort of, you know, use things like Getty Image Calculator, which can give you a price based on usage. And then,
Set them a bill.
And then I send them a bill. And I, you know, I was like, listen, it's really tempting when you see someone using your image just to fire them an email and go, what are you doing? And immediately they'll take it down. And then you've kind of lost any sort of leverage. So what I do is just like, no, don't, calm down. sit in your chair, do the due diligence. So I take screenshots of everything, and then I use that Way Back When machine, and then you can get an understanding of how long they've had it on their website. And then you just send them a very measured response, and they come back going, okay, hands up, you got me.
Or, brilliant.
Or, you know, yeah.
And they paid.
They did. They absolutely
That's
did.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And now a message from our sponsor, the Time to Log Off Academy. As Karen Carpenter almost said, logging off is hard to do, particularly during a pandemic. Before we know it, our screens become our masters rather than our servants, and we find ourselves mindlessly scrolling through our phones, obsessively chasing likes on social media, or endlessly checking our work email on the weekends. If any of this sounds familiar, some digital healing may be in order. The experts at the Time to Log Off Academy can help you see which areas of your life are suffering due to screen dependency. They'll guide you through workable solutions so you can build a healthier, happier relationship with your screens and spend more time with pets, people, and Mother Nature. The Academy's convenient online courses are available now, and fans of It's Complicated can save with a strictly limited pandemic offer. To get 25% off your digital well-being course, visit academy.itstimetologoff.com today and use the code NOW25 while this offer lasts.
So much of what you do is around travel. What has happened in the pandemic? I mean, I know I've had a look at your wonderful COVID-19 album that you've got on your website of some of the pictures you've taken of your family in the local area. I loved, by the way, your lockdown loaf film.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. That was so good.
Like everyone else, we're just making bread, yeah.
It was beautiful, though. It was really lovely.
Thank you.
So what do you do, though? What does, I know you're not really a travel photographer, but so much of what you do is travel. What do you do in a pandemic and kind of going forward? How are you going to
Well, it
adapt?
Stopped. I mean, it stopped for 3 months. So I wrote a book, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit.
We are going to talk about that, yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like work is starting to come back in, actually. I mean, I shot a really big job in Italy 6 weeks ago for the South Tyrol Tourist Board. And that's a classic example of an art buyer who kind of knew of me on Instagram. They knew the type of work that I was putting out. And this brief came in. It was all about encounters between different people that you meet in South Tyrol, these unique characters that you meet out there. Finchus, that sort of stuff, you know, like people interacting. I did a nice piece in Pelion in Greece, which is in the
I saw those. They were
right.
Lovely. Yeah.
So that's what was referenced when we got on the creative call with the agency that they'd seen. So that's sort of tiding me over at the moment. But in terms of long terms, it's going to be tricky. I'm writing another book. The publishers have commissioned me to write another one.
Let's talk about your one that's just about to come out, actually. So it will be out by the time this podcast episode launches. So the Photography Storytelling Workshop. Tell us about that book. So was this entirely a lockdown project?
Kinda. It's just turned up today, actually. I have it in my hand.
Oh, has it?
It's the first time I've seen it. Kind of. I signed the contract with the publisher in January, I think it was. So it coincided nicely with lockdown in terms of being able to write it. But it's based on a video workshop that I did with a good friend who I met on Instagram, a guy called Alex Stroll. And I shot a 6-hour video workshop in Portugal. And the camera follows me as I pitch and prepare and shoot and edit and deliver a classic Finn Beals
story for a client, and the client was a vintage Land Rover company, and the sort of camera sort of follows me as I go through all of those different stages. And we put it out on the internet, and it did really, really well. I had this fantastic response from lots and lots of people, and lots of people are sharing videos on Instagram of them watching the workshop, and they're all writing notes.
I've seen some of those. Yeah.
Right, and they were writing notes as they were watching it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, well, there's a bunch of theory at the start of the workshop in terms of how you break down a story and the sort of the methodology that I use. And I just thought this could work really nicely with as a book. And a publisher reached out to me and said, we really like the way you write on Instagram, so presumably they've been following. Have you got any ideas in terms of a book? Have you ever thought about doing a book? And I suggested turning the workshop into one.
Mm.
And they pitched it to their board, and they came back and said, yeah, sounds great. So, you know, we signed the deal, and then I had the time in lockdown to actually write it, because, man, it takes some focus.
Yeah, the gift of time. Yeah,
completely. You know, and the world sort of slowed down a bit and allowed me. You know, a lot of my shoots were postponed or cancelled. So it was perfect in that respect.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And what's your follow-up? You just said you're writing a follow-up as well.
Yeah, that's more of a sort of coffee table book. So it's based around the photography that I'm... The 72 Hours Project.
Yeah.
But also interviewing some other photographers, asking them how they do what they do, why they do what they do, where they do it.
Beautiful.
This is more of a sort of practical book.
Yeah.
Yeah, a how-to... How to be a commercial photographer today, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there's you need a few strings to your bow. You know, a bit like I was saying about chasing up copyright infringement.
Is that in the book?
It's what? Not, actually.
I think that's probably going to be...
It'll be a great chapter.
I think it's going to be the most useful thing, actually, yeah. Just what you've just told me. Yeah.
Yeah. But there is a bunch of stuff in there, like there's a whole chapter about pitching. And,
you talk about pricing, don't you? About how to price. Is that in there?
Yeah, there's some stuff about pricing and usage.
Because I think creative people, I mean, I don't think of myself as creative, but I've worked with a lot of creative people. I think that whole aspect, the commercial side, is something that a lot of creative people find very difficult. You know, asking for money, assessing what you're worth, chasing up something like the copyright infringement. I can imagine lots of photographers listening to that thinking, oh, you know, I could never do that.
Yeah, it's very hard.
sort of valuing something that you enjoy doing, I think. And I think that's part of the problem. But if a company is using it to increase the value of their company or increase, you know, it has value.
Yes.
Undoubtedly has value, and you mustn't give it away. Although saying that, you know, there are obviously instances where the creative is fantastic and it's going to add to your portfolio. And if they haven't got the budget that you're asking for, then you always negotiate down if you want to do the job, and you can foresee that content landing you other work further down the line. It's a sort of long game in that respect. But there's also sort of power in saying no. It's tricky. I have a great agent, and I've learned a lot from her and the way they value what I do. And usage is a huge part of determining the cost of a photograph. You know, the more places it's used, the more value it has, because the more value it has for the company. And there is a little chapter in the book, actually, with some email copy that you can copy and paste to sort of help get that across to your client, because it's usually the sort of stumbling block with clients. They don't really understand usage. They sort of say, well, you're shooting the pictures, so therefore I own them. I can do what I want with them. And I'm like, well, that's not really right. You know, it's like a book. You know, you can buy a book, but you don't own the words within the book.
So clients all over the world are now going to get emails and say, this photographer's been reading Finn Bill's
book. Yeah, it might start to fail. They might come back with some legalese left. But it's worth fighting for, because if you can get a decent licensing number on your work, that, you know, you get paid for a 3-year license, then in 3 years' time, if they're still wanting to use those photographs, you can get another check in the mail. You know, it's only fair, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's the equivalent of repeat fees, isn't it, for actors? Sure. And, you know, that's how they make a lot of their money, their work being shown over and over again.
Same with the music industry, you know?
Totally, yeah. I want to segue a little bit more into your own relationship with technology, because I'm conscious, as you're kind of explaining your background, that, I mean, obviously I run Time to Log Off and we're all about digital well-being, but your profile fits exactly the type of people that we normally help who struggle to disconnect. So you're an early adopter, you know, you were a web developer, you were building websites, you were using tech very early on. A lot of those people are the ones that are struggling more and more to kind of disconnect. How would you describe your relationship with technology now, and has it changed in, let's say, the 10 years since you joined Instagram?
Not massively. I use it as a method to promote my professional work. It's not, I don't have the camera on me. I have trouble connecting with my Instagram these days. I think that's more where I'm at. You know, I feel like I get anxious when I'm enjoying myself outside. I garden a lot. Mm. I grow vegetables. And have done since I was in my early 20s. So I have this sort of nice sort of physical connection with the natural world. And on that level, I'm pretty keyed into the seasons, living on the side of a mountain in Wales.
Yeah.
You know, I spent my whole weekend, I don't know what it was, where are you based? Are you based in London?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Was it raining all weekend?
It was pouring with rain all weekend.
Absolutely tipping down here, and I spent the entire weekend like a drowned rat digging drainage tunnels around my house. You know, I kind of, my anxiety comes from, oh, I should be shooting more, or I should be shooting and sharing this, but I really don't have the time to, and I don't have the enough of an urge to. I don't like sharing everything online. I really feel like Instagram changed a little bit when stories came along, you know, and people started sharing every aspect of their lives online, and I don't really go in for that.
So do you have, you know, whether they're kind of conscious or, you know, unconscious rules about what you won't share? Because I noticed you do share your family.
Yeah.
You know, the lockdown loaf was lovely because that was your wife and daughter, wasn't it, making the bread.
Yeah, and I have always photographed the family, I guess. I always check with them whether they're okay with it, and they usually, well, they're always are very honest about it. And like Sarah, my daughter, will be like, "No way, you're putting that on Instagram, Dad."
Daughters all over the world say that. Yeah,
100% vetoed. But I like. I think I like show them it in a good light. I'm not ever showing any sort of compromising picture of them. So, what was the question?
Is there stuff you don't share very deliberately? I mean, you don't share yourself, do you? Most photographers, you don't.
I don't like
sharing
myself.
Being in front of the camera.
I really don't, and I think that's where Instagram's been great for me actually, because I'm not massively an extrovert. I'm having social media actually gives me a voice without me having to get up and talk to 500,000 people. You know, the thought of doing that sort of fills me with dread. But it's a lot easier to say things and have things to say via that platform. But I need to make something. I get a bit jittery if I don't create something. So working in the garden versus shooting a campaign, they're both creating, they're both producing something. So I don't feel like I need to sort of disconnect from my phone in that respect. It's just a method of putting stuff out there.
And has it changed? Because I know you moved from London, didn't you, to Hay?
Well, I grew up
here. You were
here.
Working and living in London at one stage.
Yeah, but this is where I'm from originally.
Yeah, I was just wondering if your relationship changed because that connection with nature, which is so powerful if you live in such a beautiful place, is a pull that takes you away from, you know, getting too caught up in.
Well, it's true. I never really felt comfortable in London. It's not my place. Cities are not my place, and part of the reason for coming back here was that. I think being outside, just going for walks, you know, things like these sort of mindfulness apps, like that Calm app, it's worth millions now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it sort of plays you simulated sounds of running water or trees rustling, and it's just like, just
why not go and find go for a tree?
Walk. Just go for a walk every day, you know. I think we reach for apps for every, you know, possible ailment we have today, and it's so simple. We come from the natural world, and just going for a walk in a forest or just going for a walk around the block improves your mood immensely if you're feeling a little bit low.
I'm always really struck by the most popular screensavers and desktops are all nature.
Yeah, of course.
And I think, you know, like you, I think, why not actually go out in nature? instead of sitting and looking at a view on your laptop.
Yeah, but that's totally understandable, though, because, like, evolutionary-wise, we've hardly developed at all in the last sort of 500 years because, you know, evolution takes millions of years. Yet there are more people living in cities than there are in rural communities now than ever before. And so that is actually a fairly artificial environment, a city, you know, built around humans, but it's not actually where we've come from an evolutionary level. So our bodies are sort of a little bit sort of disconnected in a way, our bodies and our minds, I think.
Yeah, I think that's why there's been a huge growth in this kind of mindfulness movement, because we're all looking for that, you know, connection that we've lost.
Yeah. Going back to the sort of planting thing and gardening, to sort of plant and nurture and harvest and then cook a meal for your friends, it's the very essence of well-being in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a true physical, it's nothing to do with my phone or my digital online world. And I would say I live that sort of life as much as I do online.
It's so interesting that. There's been a massive explosion of gardening during lockdown.
Yeah, I find that really
interesting. Which is really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I did find that really interesting, yeah.
So So I like to finish the podcast with three questions, Finn.
Oh, right.
So bearing in mind this podcast is for people who might struggle with disconnecting or who might be looking for kind of answers of how to get a better balance between the offline and the online world. So if you had one thing to say to people about their, to think about their tech habits or the way they use the digital world, what would that be?
Okay. Well, that relates to what we've just been talking about. Yeah, I would say that real world experiences are more rewarding than virtual ones. You know, we sort of reach for an app all too quickly. But if you make the time to go for a walk, in the same way you make time to watch TV or look at your phone, I think you'll be feel better about it. It's a pretty simple answer.
But put down your phone and go for a walk.
Yeah, I think we look for more sort of profound fixes to sort of mental health sometimes. I mean, I know that's a bit simplistic to say, but...
Well, I think most people feel better after a walk, don't they? I mean, I think we've even got research that shows that.
Yeah. It's sort of enjoy it for what it is, and it really will help you stay in the moment. And that's what all these sort of mindfulness methodologies are based around. So, yeah, that would be my one thing to say.
So, my next question is if you've got a specific tip around.
Okay.
Getting a good balance. So I actually want to ask you one thing. Are you one of those people that use your phone as your alarm clock? Do you kind of sleep with your phone, or is that a boundary?
No, I don't have an alarm clock. I get up really early. Okay, so one tip would be to develop habits. I go to bed very early. I hate the news today, so I don't sort of stay up to watch that. I sleep pretty well. I get up pretty early. Do a bit of yoga in the morning, go for a walk, and then come in for breakfast. That's my sort of routine in the mornings, and just developing a sort of habit around your day, rather than just sort of like, especially during lockdown, you know, if you're not at work, we're not going to work. That's sort of a habit that you've formed, and I think you're a little bit stuck or drifting through the day. I think that's when your mind can start attacking you in the wrong ways. So
yeah,
I've just read On the Black Hill by Bruce Chatwin, or reread it, and that really sort of hit home, reading about those farming communities in the early 1900s and how habitual their living was actually, and how rhythmic it was. So Friday would be the baking day when they make all their Welsh cakes, and then you know, in the morning, if they'd follow the cattle. And it's just like, just having that routine helps you stay in the moment again.
And following the seasons as well.
Which, yeah, yeah.
You know, we've kind of really got out, particularly in cities, really got out of sync with, haven't we?
Yeah, totally. I think that again, is the connection to the natural world, isn't it? And the sort of natural rhythm.
And the last question, what have you learnt about yourself from your relationship with
my phone,
the digital world, your phone, Instagram, you know, kind of any aspect?
That there's great value in being bored. I think phones are like hugely distracting, and we all know that, but checking news headlines and Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, it reduces the boredom, but that distraction prevents you from thinking creatively or a little deeper, and I think that's kind of annoying. So, you know, deep work, good work requires focus, and I felt that during lockdown because not so much was going on, and I could sort of like dig into the writing and getting this book out the door. So yeah, being bored.
Yeah, it was a lovely pause, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
A pause from all the other distractions. I'm really struck as well by you talking about all the people that you've met through Instagram, but then have connected with in real life.
Yeah.
Because that's really, I think, you know, one of the values of social media is that you get to meet this huge number of people, but actually it's the connecting in real life as a result of it that is the value, isn't it, really?
I think that's huge. I think that's huge. And I've travelled over around the world and photographed with these friends that I've developed relationships with, and it's a wonderful way to meet people, especially for me living in the hills in the middle of nowhere.
It sounds very appealing, I must say, and looks very appealing from your beautiful photography.
Thank you. I wouldn't swap it, I have to say. It's a nice way of life. It's not always easy. You know, when you're draining your house, there's like a flood coming down.
Yeah, digging a ditch in the torrential rain doesn't sound much fun.
it's kind of rewarding. It sort of like goes back to messing around on beaches, damming little streams, you know? It's like a sort of grown-up version of that. And my son was helping me out. And, you know, we were cursing all the way through it, but then we get inside and we're steaming and having a hot cup of tea and a biscuit. It's kind of nice.
That's the bit I'd enjoy.
Yeah, but you need the first bit, don't you?
You need the first bit, yeah.
Life is about balance, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to have both to enjoy the good bits.
So thank you so much for joining me. Your book, Finn's book, The Photography Storytelling Workshop, is out now. So I want to encourage everybody to go and get it. And how can people find you, Finn? Give us your...
Oh.
Obviously, you're Finn on Instagram.
FINN, yes. My Twitter, unfortunately, doesn't follow that. It's Finn Beals. It's my full name. And my website is madebyfinn.com.
Made by Finn.
Yeah.
Lovely. So thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's been nice chatting.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.